Alrighty, time once again for Truth About Markets in New Zealand.
Hello, Christchurch. I feel your panic, your fear. You're probably still having some aftershocks.
Yeah.
I was in the Northridge earthquake, the scariest thing to ever happen. And I was also in an emergency landing on a plane, and that wasn't even as scary. And I was actually driven off the road by a serial killer in Connecticut. And that wasn't as scary as the Northridge earthquake. When the ground moves below your feet, you genuinely, it's hard to, you know, you feel like a little ant.
Oh, yeah. So no injuries, from what I gather.
There were injuries.
Yeah.
There were no deaths.
Okay.
That's a different thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's scary, isn't it? That whole, why Christchurch, I wonder? My goodness. Because they said now that it's on a new fault line. They said they didn't know that there was such a fault line running right through Christchurch. Now they know.
Well, it's on that whole Pacific plate. You know, the Pacific region is a very volatile region. And New Zealand has tens of thousands of earthquakes every year. Only a few are felt, but never, very rarely this big. I think it was a 7.1. I forget what the Northridge one, I think, was 6.9, maybe 7. And, you know, the numbers are exponential. Bigger than even the one I went through. You were in a 4.0, you said?
Right, in Los Angeles. It was scary.
Yeah.
Very scary. Kind of wakes you up in the middle of the night, and you really feel in the pit of your stomach like, you know, something really bad is happening.
Yeah, so it's an exponential scale. So imagine between a 4 and a 7 is a huge. I don't know how to do the maths on it, but it's exponentially larger.
Yeah, you know, it's because you just have no control over it. You know, it's like someone who's grabbing your innards and just ripping them out of your body. And then, after, of course, you live there for a while, and then you don't care anymore because you realize it's, you know, another earthquake.
Oh, yeah? Well, you do when it's a big one, because I split L.A. Within 2 months after the Northridge earthquake.
All right.
I said, I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah, baby. Well, they're due for another one in L.A., I guess. I guess they're always due for another big one.
Yeah, they've been saying that forever. They're always saying that.
Yeah. Then they happen.
Well, on the San Andreas. No, there hasn't been a big one in San Andreas.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news for New Zealand, anyway, I guess, in New Zealand, Australia, they're going to benefit by the news that China's economy is rip-roaring ahead, gangbusters expansion. Good for the Kiwi dollar, good for the Aussie dollar, Canadian dollar, and we see that reflected in those currencies.
Oh, yeah. Well, and of course, that would be, you know, we could put on our neoliberal Milton Friedmanite hats here and say, oh, gee, Christchurch, you're so lucky you had this earthquake, because now this is great for your GDP, because you're going to have to rebuild. And that's disaster capitalism for you.
Yeah, I saw one of the headlines saying that this was going to increase GDP for the area.
Are you serious?
Yep, yep. Rebuilding Christchurch was going to give jobs.
I was just joking. I was making a sick joke.
Right. Well, I mean, that's, you know, if you extrapolate that thinking, you end up with suicide bankers who believe that, well, you know, if I blew, you know, the entire port city of New Orleans got blown up, but think of all the money we made rebuilding it. You know, if I blow myself up by trading on speculative derivative bets and I wipe myself out and I put a gun to my head and blow my head off, think of all the money I'll make rebuilding myself in the afterlife. So you end up with the same ideology.
Well, so people like arsonists, instead of locking them up for, you know, 5 years in Europe or 35 years in the U.S., they should be getting a percentage of the GDP boost they give.
Yeah, well, I mean, what is ExxonMobil but an arsonist? They burn down huge swathes of the economy and the ecology, and they make money rebuilding it, and they consider it heroes. But what's the U.S. military? They blew up a city like Fallujah, then they got to rebuild it, and they're considered economic heroes. You know, what's an arsonist? Just because the arsonist happens to work for the other side, like a Greenpeace or some other, ecologically activist group, doesn't mean that they're not helping the economy any less.
Actually, I was thinking of, speaking of arsonists, there was that giant explosion on the PG&E gas line in outside of San Francisco. And the wide swathe of destruction turned Crestmore Canyon into a moonscape with collapsed homes, 37 destroyed and 8 seriously damaged, burned eucalyptus trees, a massive water-filled crater marking the site of the explosion, 50 feet wide and 40 feet deep. between 4 and 6 people died, according to all the reports. But somebody on our site commented that there was reports that the pipeline was from 1948. Talk about, I mean, this is American capitalism. This is the truth about a dilapidated, you know, this is what Ayn Rand said socialism would deliver. And in fact, it's been, you know, Milton Friedman-esque destruction of middle class and destruction of government that has delivered this.
Yeah, you're right. PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, right?
Yeah.
They had this, some huge blow up because the pipes were from 1948. Well, 1948, that was probably, of course, part of the huge effort that came in after the U.S. won the war, and they had a lot of money to do stuff like build infrastructure. That peaked out in the 50s and the early 60s, and they haven't spent a dime on infrastructure since. They've been riding on their coattails of the World War II victory for 25, 30 years. Now it's time to actually do some infrastructure build out, but they have no money to do so. So it's just deterioration and, you know, sinking into the sea.
Yeah, it is. It was 1948 that the pipe was there. And apparently they're saying in the San Francisco thing that was the problem one of why hadn't PG&E replaced this natural gas pipe, the San Bruno's fire origin, since its installation in 1948? Was the problem one of cost? If so, would replacing such a pipe cost more than the $46 million the company spent trying to push Proposition 16 in June's election, which Proposition 16 we'll follow that link, and it goes, Pacific Gas and Electric Company's unsuccessful $46 million attempt to pass Proposition 16 on Tuesday failed to persuade the company's own customers. The ballot measure, which would have limited the ability of local governments to enter the electricity business and compete with PG&E, fared best in parts of the state. So they spent $46 million trying to prevent competition.
Right.
And instead of replacing a pipeline that was...
would have made them competitive.
Which was 70 years old.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's the way it's done these days. And people, they don't... Competition died a long time ago in America. You got oligarchs, basically, who control the political process to ensure their oligarchy and monopoly positions. And there is no competition. That's why prices are going up. Lack of competition and deflation. That's why prices are going up.
Plus, there are demons in America. The demons are labor, peasants, workers who organize. That is the worst thing that could possibly ever happen in America. The people who have to work for a living themselves will say these are evil people to organize.
Yeah.
But they say nothing about the people who organize and spend $46 million to try to defeat any measures by the people.
That's right.
So they have no problem at all with the Business Roundtable or Council on Foreign Relations or all of these business organizations, or, you know, some people protest the likes of the G20 and stuff like that. But, you know, the vast population has no problem with lobbyists, lobbying groups. These are organized labor. This is organized capital.
Look, Pacific Gas and Electric should merge with a big drug company like Merck or Pfizer, and they should offer running hot and cold Prozac or some other antidepressant drug right to the home. So when you go into your kitchen, you got hot, cold, and Prozac. This way you don't have to think for one freaking second about the fact you're being turned into a peasant, you god moron.
Well, Max,
There's
already a lot of Prozac in the water supply.
Capturing that as a revenue source. PG&E should be getting paid for all the Prozac they distribute in the water.
Pfizer should. Isn't it Pfizer?
They should get a distribution agreement.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that will be coming soon. Right now, during the 27-year bull market, they could overlook those bits of profit margin.
Well, yeah, now the income started to come back.
So you're going to start seeing people be thrown in jail for debts that they can't pay, and you're going to start seeing people fined and taxed and you know, sent bills for the Prozac they're drinking in their water supply. But we'll be right back after this musical message, if we're here.
That sounds encouraging.
See?
All right. Stay tuned. Yeah, we made it. Wow, that was a close one.
Well, I didn't know there was going to be a big aftershock in the break.
Yeah, well, who would have known? Unless you're like one of the mammals, like an elephant that knows when the earthquake or the tsunami is coming.
Well, I remember post-Northridge earthquake.
Yeah.
It was, you know, you constantly felt dizzy for the next 2 or 3 weeks because there were constant aftershocks. It was always, you know, most of them were kind of small, but the earth was always swaying a little bit. So you got dizzy after a while.
Wow. Well, yeah, getting back to this whole Prozac in the water thing with PG&E and, Pacific Gas and Electric and, you know, the fact that there's already Prozac in the water. And you bring up a good point that because governments are going bankrupt, local governments, state governments, the federal government, they got to find new sources of revenue from the peasants. So they will start charging it for the Prozac you find in your water, but there's no competition, so you won't be able to buy any alternative water source. So that's a locked monopoly position. They're going to pay for the Prozac in the water. Also, they'll go into your email. Of course, they got access to the back door now with NSA controlling Google and all these other email accounts. They'll know when and where in your emails you used a trademark phrase. Like if you said, oh, this Microsoft Windows product sucks. Well, you'll get a bill from Microsoft saying you used our copyrighted phrase, Microsoft Windows, you owe us 1/10,000th of a penny. But of course, there will be no jobs available, so you're going to have to try to make that money by speculating on Farmville and other virtual exchanges, Zynga virtual currency exchanges and so-called games. I mean, I wonder if the plantation workers back in Antebellum South, 1840 period, will consider their job picking cotton a game. Like, that's all right. These welts on my back are so. It's just what happens when you play the game. I guess that's what it means when the uptown, when they say, oh, I'm in the game, I'm out of the game. They'd be pimping and hoeing and shooting up people. They're in the game. Well, now you're going to be on Facebook, Farmville, or yo, playing the game, getting that virtual currency to afford that processed slice of cheese down at 7-Eleven.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm saying? It's all about that uptown throwing down like you like it. Inside your head, inside your mind.
Why do you swing your arms and your head so much?
So I can get out my pronunciation. You know, it's about reciprocation and reciprocity. I learned that from Jesse Jackson. It's all about reciprocity.
How many times have we watched Jesse Jackson, or we attempted to watch anyway, Jesse Jackson on Democracy Now? You cannot understand a single word that man says.
No, it's totally unintelligible.
I mean, it's the weirdest thing.
Nobody knows. Like, nobody knows what he's saying at any time.
I like the way Amy Goodman looks at him, though, and like she doesn't understand what he said, and she'll just like kind of think about it for a second and then ask some other question. Just we're like,
all right. It's like, here's Jesse Jackson. He marched with Martin Luther King during the Civil Rights era. Thank you, Jesse Jackson. What do you think about Obama's latest program? Well, it's the reciprocation of the intricacication. You know, I can't even imitate him. But, I mean, it's completely unintelligible. You have no idea what he's saying at any time. Nobody's understood a word he said for 20 years now. But he still gets a lot of TV time, FaceTime, because back in the 1960s, he was on TV marching with Dr. Martin Luther King. And they shot him down. So the next thing they got is some inarticulate guy who can't speak 5 words together.
I don't think he's inarticulate. He's just inaudible. You can't understand what he's saying.
Yeah, right. He's
got this heavy accent, and it's very clipped. So it's like you don't know what he's saying.
Yeah, but, well, cue up one of them clips from YouTube. Jesse Jackson, and try to figure out what he's saying. You could just pick any clip at random, and you'll have absolutely no idea what the guy's saying. And it's a bit of I would think an issue for folks that are relying on this man for their political guidance, because absolutely nobody understands what the heck he's saying. Here he is.
Well, you can keep on talking because I got to load it up.
You got queued it up there, Jesse Jackson.
YouTube's so slow. Okay, so, but I remember him from the 80s, always running for president. He was like the Dennis Kucinich of the day. You know, he was always running. Okay, but still loading this up. Sorry there for those people who are bored, listening, waiting for silence, dead air, as we sit here going, we're going to get Jesse Jackson. Probably half the people in New Zealand probably don't even know who he is.
Well, yeah, exactly. But they're dealing with the aftershock, so, they've got their own worries at the moment. Oh, there's Plunder. Oh, there he is. There's he's looking good. He's got a nice tie on, nice shooting tie. This guy, Dean Baker, he's an amusing chap.
You know, Jesse Jackson, while this is loading, it's going to take another few minutes. Maybe the third part of the show will be playing it. But he's from Chicago. He lives in Chicago. His son is, I think, a senator, a state senator there. And I was just reading in the Herald Tribune, in a little section, just a little tiny comment somewhere that about Mayor Daley deciding that he's not going to run for re-election. And the whole community was shocked. Everybody's shocked. They're stunned because Daley has run Chicago for the last 56 years.
Yeah.
So it was just astounding to this theme that we keep on talking about of neo-feudalism and aristocrats and how America has these, families that run so many things, and they pretend that they have like this different sort of system to a class system and an aristocracy and things like that. But they clearly, is it in human nature to want the same familiar lords that you kind of accept, that if you could just limit the concentration of wealth to some families that you endorse, then
yeah, human nature is not to be free. Human nature is to be ruled over by someone or something. And that's what made America so special, is that they actually broke free of that, but now they've lost it. And the thing about Mayor Daley leaving Chicago is because they're teeing up that mayor job for Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So Rahm Emanuel, he said a few months ago, he said, you know, I would love, my ideal job would be to be mayor of Chicago.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, a few weeks later, Mayor Daley says, oh, I'm not going to run for re-election.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what Mayor Daley got quid pro quo. Either it's cash or something. I mean, he's not just going to give up the seat for Rahm to help Obama, re-election effort after he failed the first 2 years of his presidency for nothing. I mean, he's got to be getting something in return. Chicago, notoriously dirty, town politically, goes back to Al Capone days when they ruled, the mob ruled the town back then.
Well, let's see if we can play this Jesse Jackson clip right now. I'm going to put the mic to the computer. And hold on, let's see. 85%
of support. As the home goes, they keep that level. And the borrower paying the lender's insurance. It's utterly corrupt. While we are restructuring, not bailing out Wall Street, at the bottom, the hemorrhaging of churches and jobs and student loans is unacceptable, and therefore a big idea.
Well, I got into a little. We'd have to research that to find the bits that he's on.
Wow, what an anticlimax!
Well, you're the one that wanted to play it.
No,
Rice
no.
Kaiser,
well, but... I know how to find the right one.
Okay, well, you go do it.
I'm gonna next
okay.
show.
Okay, So yeah, Max Kaiser.
Yeah,
we were talking about Chicago. Rahm Emanuel is now going to obviously move to Chicago and become the mayor there. It's a great city, I guess, if you want to be a corrupt official. It's kind of like early America days, like the Tammany Hall sort of stuff. The population itself doesn't seem to mind.
No. I mean, Chicago. It's the second city behind New York. They've got the second city playhouse, the TV. Which, of course, is a springboard for a lot of Canadians who enter the America and become comedians in Chicago and then go on Saturday Night Live. So it's a big comedy town. Steppenwolf Theater, of course, big theater town.
Yeah, but it's also, so I'm talking about the corruption. And, there's a state in America which is the most corrupt, and that's Rhode Island. And, the mafia runs everything openly there. And there's a guy, I remember some senator, or local state senator, found guilty of racketeering as part of his mafia connection. And then he was like reelected. People after he served his time, people like their mafia.
Well,
sometimes.
Remember Caligula put his horse in the Senate, right? Caligula's horse.
Yeah.
America's corruption is so bad at this point that, convicted criminals can be elected senators. You could probably elect a bag of French fries and make that the senator from some state. Meanwhile, guys who have actually worked for on behalf of the people, Russ Feingold, his seat's in jeopardy. Also, that smarty pants down there in Florida, Who's
Alan Grayson? Alan Grayson? But Russ Feingold is a genuine civil libertarian. He has stood up. He's the one person who was against the. He voted against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He voted against a Patriot Act. He voted against the bailouts. And
Challenger has a lot of money.
Okay, we'll be right back after this message, though. Yeah, so we were talking about Russ Feingold in Wisconsin running against this millionaire. Again, Americans love the mafia. They love very rich people. And here's a guy, Russ Feingold, who is one of the very few. He's totally outside the Democratic Party. That's the machine isn't getting behind him.
Right.
Because he votes against everything they want. He voted against... I believe he voted against the healthcare reform. He voted against the bailouts. He voted against the Patriot Act. He voted against the wars, and the right wing attack machine with supporting this guy, the multimillionaire running against him,
yep,
is pretty vile and disgusting. But what do you think of this? It bodes ill because it's the one of the very, very few people in the Senate or Congress who has maintained some sort of genuine integrity.
Right. No, it's just money buys the votes. And it's you're not allowed to actually buy votes and give people actual money in return for their votes. And yet that's a very thin veneer to what has become a system of people buying votes. What's the difference whether this guy puts $30 or $40 million to become senator in promising people all kinds of free lucre at the other end of the machine, at the end of the voting, than just giving them money up front? It's the same money. It's the same idea. You're buying votes. So if you're buying votes and the money that you're using to buy the votes is corrupt money and it supports the warfare state and the other corrupt part of the society, then what do you have left? You have nothing.
Yeah, but it's also this this kind of vile, red team, blue team thing you have going on in the U.S. democracy. There are literally two of the same sort of people, usually. In this case, there isn't. But, 50% of Americans support the red team and 50% support the blue team. And it's easy... with it that close to really, the elite who usually are part of the same, they're on the same team. There's very rare exceptions like Ron Paul, Russ Feingold, that are beyond the team on which they serve. Mm-hmm. And yet, everybody's angry. The red team this time around is pretty riled up and ready to vote out any blue team members.
Yeah, well, I think it gets back to the problem we discussed earlier, and that's the problem of drugs, the drugs in the water and drugs throughout the food system. And the population is just too drug-addled at this point. I mean, you wouldn't go into a mental asylum and expect to have an election that was somehow adhered to some democratic principles because everyone is severely incapacitated by their addiction to Thorazine and antipsychotic medication. Now, in America, you've got 300 million psychotics, and they're not going to generate any kind of democratic electoral process that's reflective of the fact that they're not psychotic. So there's no turning back at this point because now the gene pool is totally corrupted. They're giving birth to a new generation of even more deeply psychotic children than running the place now. And you end up with a bunch of these big, fat, overindulged babies.
Well, you've got the blue team, though. So they were, Russ Feingold became so well known because of his vocal opposition to George Bush and his torture policies, the invasion of privacy, the illegal eavesdropping on Americans. He stood up and he was very vocal against it. And all the blue team members, all the Daily Coast sort of people, they were all like cheering Russ Feingold. Well, as soon as their team member gets into the White House and into office, they totally shun him. They don't want him to speak up. They don't want him to speak up on the very same principles he was against George Bush for.
Yeah.
So, this is a big problem.
Well, we talked about this before. The co-option of the, in other words, Ron Paul created the Tea Party movement, and then idiots and hacks like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin hijacked it. And now Ron Paul is shunned.
Yeah, and of course you can't put down the Tea Party because those people will be like, no, we still believe in the same principles as Ron Paul. But if you're headed by Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, that's impossible.
And when Ron Paul himself says that you're no longer representing me, then I believe him.
Yeah.
Which is what he has said. And then you have Dennis Kucinich. He'll say, I want the public option on healthcare. He fought for it, and then he has eventually caved in to Obama's lobbying. And that went away. And then, of course, he's been totally marginalized. You've got Ralph Nader is a better example. He is the first to identify corporations and banks as the hugely negative influence that they are on the political process. Then you have Obama and these people.
He got marginalized. Why? Because the blue team did not get in. They think, you know, that because he stole votes away from Al Gore.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody on the left hates him now.
Yeah, but they steal his policies. And they steal his everything that he stands for, and they repackage it and claim it as their own, and they marginalize the guy who came up with it to begin with.
Yeah.
Because they want to be on Fox News talking on the Sunday morning TV shows and getting their hair done for $600 a pop and, you know, getting their feet massaged. And again, goes back to that need on the margins to make millions to impress teenage girls and nightclubs in Monaco is basically what drives the global economy and the politics and big economies with lots of hedge fund managers like the U.S. So ultimately, these guys are just, I mean, my thought is this, and I'll leave it on this note, because we got 2 minutes. If, in fact, the America wants to pull itself out of the toilet, you've got to create a new coalition of Ron Paul and Ralph Nader. Those two guys, if they ran for president of the United States in 2012, and they took office, and they reformed the policies and the government and the economy the way that they know that they should, the first 12 months would be the worst depression in America's history. 36 months later, America would be a world-beating power once again.
And they should have Michael Hudson as their, head of economic policy.
Yeah, put William K. Black in charge of the SEC.
Yeah.
And the CFTC and all the other regulatory agencies.
Empty out the prisons of all of the people in there on drug charges, and Ron Paul will lead that charge, and fill them up with all the bankers that have defrauded and stolen the economy.
Outlaw hedge funds.
Well, these are the policies that we would bring to the
United States.
But depends
if you want to be a free person or you want to be on Farmville. Ain't gonna work on Zynga's Farmville no more. It's a new Bob Dylan song. Ain't gonna work on Zynga's Farmville no more. You don't wanna be paid nothing for clicking all day. Ain't gonna work on Zynga's Farmville no more.
I'm sorry, Mike from Liverpool. I know you're.
Well, I'm still gonna sing that Jimmy from Liverpool song. I've yet to cue that up for Christmas.
Okay, well that's it. And everybody, stay safe and stay. Try to relax, I guess, have a pint or something to help you through the aftershocks.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, until that time, Max and Stacy. Dang. Bye, y'all.